The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
And first pitch, rushing! Deep left field! This is way back! Welcome on!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
Hey there! Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Wednesday, and guess what?
It's gonna be May.
That's right. Welcome to May. Frank Stample joined by Chris Towers today on the show. Mike Trout is hurt again. The Brewers promoted one of their top prospects, Tyler Black. Jack Flaherty got all the revenge against the St. Louis Cardinals and much more. But unfortunately, Chris, we do have to start with the bad news on Mike Trout, who needs knee surgery. He was diagnosed with a torn meniscus. No official timeline, but not expected to miss the rest of the season. Obviously, this sucks. Trout was off to a strong start this season. 10 homers, 6 steals. Looked obviously motivated, running again. It was really cool to see the side of Mike Trout once again. And it feels like so much of the second half of his career has just been derailed by injury year in and year out. So we are being robbed of seeing a first ballot Hall of Fame player play out the second half of his career. And frankly, that sucks. So, Chris, your reaction? Any idea how much time he's going to miss? Because I know you're usually good at looking into these injuries and such.
Yeah, so I did some research. One, I don't even want to be around anymore. If we can do a second, I think you should leave reference of the week. It just sucks. Like, Mike Trout hadn't missed a game with a knee injury since 2012. And I know there's a lot of I told you so's going around about, oh, Mike Trout, I told you he can't stay healthy and anyone who drafted him is dumb and all that. And it's just, he was already discounted. We don't need the I told you so's. Everybody knew Mike Trout. Everybody was accounting for the possibility of a Mike Trout injury. It just sucks. And I don't believe that the fact that he missed a bunch of time with a wrist injury last year made him more likely to suffer a knee injury this year. I think it's just crappy luck, and I hate it, and I'm upset. Anyway, now to the actual analysis that you asked for. Meniscus injuries have incredibly wide timetables, from what I understand, because there are three different types of procedures you can have when you have a meniscus injury. Meniscus is a part of your knee that I think provides cushioning during impact and stuff like that. So you can play professional sports without a meniscus. I believe Dwayne Wade had part of his meniscus removed. I remember Meta World Peace knee Ron Artest had his entire meniscus removed and was back in 11 days after having surgery. That is a possible timetable here, but it's a pretty unlikely one given Trout's age, given how much he has left on his contract. It seems really unlikely that they would do something that would threaten to shorten his career. So the more realistic outcomes are either what is called a meniscectomy, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, which is where you shave off the injured part of the meniscus, and that has usually a 6-week-ish timetable. So some examples of that, Cole Calhoun in 2021 had a meniscus tear, was back around 5 weeks because he got the damaged meniscus removed. Christian Pache a year ago, he almost exactly a year to the day, April 29th. He also, I believe, had the meniscectomy and was back June 16th. So about 6 weeks later. Then one example I found on the long end was Ronald Guzman. You remember him from the Rangers, I believe. In 2021, he had surgery to repair a torn meniscus in around mid-April, missed the rest of the season. Now, the fact that the Angels have talked about not expecting it to be a season-ending injury leads me to believe that it's more like the shorter end of the spectrum. But the fact that they expect him to be back this season, or it's not expected to be season-ending, was how it was originally reported, makes me think it could be a repair, and it's just that maybe it's a 4-month timetable when he can get back in August or September, which obviously would be close to a worst case scenario. So ultimately it's probably, we're not going to know until they put him under and we find out what the type of surgery that he had is, but I would guess anywhere from 6 weeks to 3 or 4 months, unfortunately.
Yeah, so very wide range of outcomes there with this Mike Trout injury. And before we move on to the replacements for him, I guess another aspect of this injury is that when he returns, My guess is he probably won't run, right? Like coming back from a knee injury, this pace that he was on, we haven't seen anything like this from Trout in, 5-6 years running like this, so... Yeah, I think once he does return, we probably have to temper our expectations in terms of the output. But my guess is if he's right and he's good to go, Mike Trout, he's still going to hit for solid batting average. I know it's a little bit lower so far this season. But
he had actually cut the strikeout rate, which had been a concern in recent years.
Yeah.
Expected stats for the batting average were much better and obviously had been elite, elite power. So
yeah,
as long as he's on the field, I think Mike Trout's going to be an elite hitter. Just probably wouldn't expect him to run nearly as much when he gets back.
Let's get into some Mike Trout replacements. And in shallower leagues, I have 5 names written down here. I believe they are all under 70% rostered. Jurickson Profar, who continues to hit well. He was leading off for the Padres. Brian De La Cruz, Mark Canna, who's kind of boring, but in a points league, his skill set still plays up there. And then I think the two more exciting names that we've talked about recently, Willier Abreu and Andy Páez. Abreu had another big game here on Tuesday, 3-for-4 with a double, a triple, run, and RBI. The triple was 114.4 exit velocity. I hate that he doesn't play against lefties, but I think he's a really, really interesting hitter. So, Chris, give me your, I guess, 3 favorites from that group. It's Profar, De La Cruz, Canna, Abreu, and Páez.
It's Páez at the top for me, and then it might just depend on format. Like, maybe I can just cheat and say Canna in a points league and Willier Abreu in a specifically daily lineups league so you can get him out of the lineup when he's not starting against lefties. If I can't do that cop-out, I think I prefer Brian De La Cruz to Jurickson Profar, although I think I probably like Abreu in Roto more than either of them.
Yeah, the problem for Abreu next week, it looks like the Red Sox only have 5 games on the schedule, and as of now, 3 lefties.
Yeah.
Is he only going to play 2 games next week? I mean, that would be criminal the way this guy is hitting.
Yeah, that's tough. Like, it's one of those situations where he's young enough that you'd hope they just give him some run and just see if he can hit lefties, you know?
Yeah, so I think I would have to agree, at least for next week, Páez is up at the top, and then if you're in a points league, I think one of Canna or Profar is fine. You could ride the hot hand with Profar as long as he's hitting well. I don't know how long this is going to last. My guess is probably not that long. But for right now, he is hitting well. Again, that is Jurickson Profar. Some names in 5 outfielder leagues. You might be able to still find some of these. Joey Loperfido, who was called up by the Astros today on Tuesday when we're recording this. Well, I guess technically it's Wednesday now. Joe Adell, who has hit well recently. Another underrated aspect of this is that the Angels lineup is even worse now without Mike Trout. Luis Renjifo, who had a big game, he went 2-for-3 with a sock and a shoe. Brenton Doyle has hit well for the Rockies, and Jordan Beck, who was called up, and he had two hits in his first career game. Chris, who are your three favorites from this group? Loperfido, Adele, Renjifo, Doyle, and Jordan Beck.
This is much more context dependent because Renjifo, especially, like, that's a sneaky, super valuable play in a roto league because he's going to hit near the top of the lineup, I would guess, moving forward. He's eligible at like four different positions, I think.
Second.
And he's going to steal some bases.
Second, third, shortstop, outfield. Yeah.
Yeah. And so technically six different positions in a true roto league. And that's super valuable just to have around. But I would probably go Loperfido, Adele, and Beck, just banking on some upside there. I would honestly rather have any of those three ahead of Jerickson Profar or Brian De La Cruz as well. Again, just I think there's a more realistic path to sustainable upside, I guess is the way to put it, because I know Jerickson Profar is hitting really well right now. I just don't believe in it.
Mm-hmm. Loperfido, by the way, in his debut, he was batting seventh and was in left field for the Astros. He went 1-for-5 with 2 RBI in that one. Some names in deeper leagues. You could look at Jacob Young, who is getting some run with the Nationals, and I think he has 12 steals in 22 games mm-hmm. so far. He is just running a lot. So if you do need speed, there's Mike Tauchman, who's hit well. Tommy Pham, who is consistently batting second for the White Sox. Not a great lineup, but obviously he's getting playing time. And Wensiel Perez, a name we have not talked about, and it's about time we do, because he's like a former prospect-ish for the Detroit Tigers, and in game two of that doubleheader, he went 3-for-4 with a double dong. He has played 15 games so far. He's batting over 300. He's got 3 homers, 2 steals, an OPS over 1,000. He's 24 years old. He's a switch hitter. He's versatile. He could play the infield and the outfield. Last season in the minors, had 26 steals. I think he had close to 30 steals the year before that as well. So there's an interesting profile, kind of interesting in a deeper league here. Any interest in these names? Jacob Young, Mike Tauchman, Tommy Pham, Wensiel Perez.
So I hope this is a safe place with friends who won't judge me, because I have two things I want to say. One, I saw a clip of the Marlins AAA affiliate winning against the Braves AAA affiliate on a walk-off balk. I think there were 3 balks in the same inning. And I, watching it, like I know what the rule for a balk is, but every time I see a balk, I'm like, I have no idea what the umpire saw. That's my one admission. And two is that up until about 2 weeks ago, I had never heard the name Wensiel Perez. Just going to be honest, he's was not on my radar. Had a 784 OPS last season. He's been interesting since he got to the high minors. He's been around for a long time, was signed in 2016 as a 16-year-old, but really didn't do much until he got to double A. And since getting to double A, he's played 158 games between the two top levels of the minors, 15 homers, 34 stolen bases, decent batting average, maybe 270. I don't think that this is a profile that is likely to matter much for fantasy. Even the 2 home runs he hit today were both below 102 miles per hour in exit velocity. So I think it's probably fringe pop, maybe a little more speed, but that it only matters in deeper roto leagues, I think, for Wensiel Perez.
Mm-hmm. Who's your favorite of that group? Jacob Young, Tauchman, Pham, and Perez?
Pham. 16 homers, 22 stolen bases last season. I think he could be a viable 5 outfielder option in 12-team leagues even.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly. Tommy Pham only 9% rostered and has 7 games on the schedule next week, so I do think he is someone you could look at. Some buy-low candidates, 2 outfielders for the Texas Rangers is Wyatt Langford and Evan Carter. Carter's coming around a little bit recently. Wyatt Langford, I know he hit his first home run over the weekend. It was an inside-the-park home run, which is hilarious. And Nick Castellanos, who actually just had a big game here on Tuesday, hit a game-tying home run in the 9th inning of that one. Chris, are you okay putting the buy-low label on all of those names, Langford, Carter, and Castellanos?
Absolutely. I'm kind of amazed at how many people, including maybe some people on this podcast, have been willing to write off Nick Castellanos. He was really awesome last season, and I feel like he didn't get the respect he deserved. 29 homers, 11 stolen bases, 106 RBI. Like, Nick Castellanos was a legitimate five category contributor, and I have no reason to believe that he won't pull out of this slump. And I like all three of those guys as buy low candidates.
I guess this is the part where I should probably defend why I wasn't really in on Nick Castellanos. And
I mean, look, you don't have to defend it. It looks great right now.
I wasn't out per se.
Take a victory lap.
He was not a target of mine. And the main concern for me for Castellanos has always been, and it's very much so the Javier Baez effect. His mm-hmm. plate discipline is so bad. It's one of those where it feels like it could just fall off a cliff out of nowhere. And so I would rather be out 1 year early rather than 1 year late, but you're right. Castellanos was still awesome last year. And my guess is he is going to be much better than he has been so far this season. So I would agree. I think all three of those, if you're looking for the trade market, again, there's Langford, there's Carter, and there's Nick Castellanos. Let's take our first break. When we return, we will get to our players of the night, and we will do that right after this.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, here we are finally getting to the rest of Tuesday's action. And let's jump in with our players of the night.
Oh, my goodness. Holy cow. Do you believe it?
Do you believe it? Chris, you're up. Player of the night.
Do not ever tell Jack Flaherty that a revenge game is not a real thing, because that dude was way hyped up to face the Cardinals today, and it was super fun to watch. He was throwing like 97, 98 miles an hour early in this start. Ended up with his fastball up 1.5 miles per hour from the season so far, which means he was about 2 miles per hour up from where he was last season. Just utterly dominant. 14 strikeouts. That's a career high in 6 innings. Struck out the first 7 batters he faced. That is a Tigers franchise record. I don't know if you guys know this. The Tigers have been around for a really long time. Ty Cobb played for the Tigers. That dude's been dead for like 70 years.
Oh my God.
This franchise has been around for a long time, and nobody had ever done that before. 24 swings and misses on 93 pitches. His knuckle curve was outstanding. His slider was really good. He's got 50 strikeouts to 5 walks on the season. I believe Jack Flaherty now leads Major League Baseball in K-minus walk percentage. I know the ERA is still 4.0, but he looks really, really good right now.
Yes, he does. For all the reasons that you mentioned, 14 strikeouts, 24 swinging strikes. He opened the start with 7 straight strikeouts, which tied an American League record. Velocity was up. Now,
you know who holds the Major League record for that? It was very recent.
I'm pretty sure
it's Pablo Lopez.
I was going to say Kerry Wood, but you might be right. Sounds like you're right.
I said it very confidently, so I hope I'm right. Yes. Set a Major League record with 9 consecutive strikeouts on July 11th of 2022, I believe.
Pretty awesome stuff there. With Jack Flaherty, you mentioned the ERA is at 4 on the nose. That comes with a 2.85 FIP and a 2.18 xFIP, 12.5 K per 9, 1.3 walks per 9. And this is why we have kind of been pounding the table for Jack Flaherty. Just stick with him. The strikeout to walk ratio is too good. The stuff looks too good, and he's going to come around. And obviously, he did exactly that. Comparing him to the names we spoke about yesterday, Chris, we were ranking breakout starting pitchers. We had Lodolo, Bryce Miller, Garrett Crochet, and Who am I missing? It would be Ryan Pepiot.
Yeah.
Where would Flaherty rank amongst that group?
Right in there.
Yeah.
I think he's right near the top. I don't really see a strong case against Flaherty being a top 40 starting pitcher right now. The velocity is up enough that it feels significant. He's throwing about as hard as he has since 2019. Curveball and slider have both been excellent swing and miss pitches so far this season. Before today's start, he had a whiff rate over 40% on both of those pitches, and that's only going to go up after today. So yeah, it might be recency bias. I think I had Bryce Miller at the top of that group. I might put Jack Flaherty at the top of it.
I will update my rankings on Wednesday.
Yeah, I haven't done it yet, so I don't want to commit yet because I might get to tomorrow and be like, wait, hold on. I can't put Jack Flaherty ahead of all those guys, but I might.
Feels like a 1A and a 1B situation for me where Lodolo and Flaherty are up at the top. I express a little bit more skepticism with Bryce Miller, although I can't argue with the results. He's been really good. So
that's fair.
I would put him third on that list, followed by Ryan Pepiot and then Garrett Crochet. So for me, it's like Lodolo and Flaherty are kind of in a mini tier of those breakouts.
Scott tweeted something about it today where I think somebody asked him like for a glob update, like where does the glob start? How big is the glob? And I assume you're having the same issue where I kind of like too many starting pitchers now. Going to SP like 55 feels like SP 40 last year.
Yeah.
Where there's just a lot like I love Mackenzie Gore had another good, not great start today, although it was against the Astros, and I still really like him. Love what we've seen from Tanner Houck.
The 30 to 60 range at SP this year feels really interesting and very interchangeable. That's why we're kind of talking about this on a per start basis where things are kind of moving up and down. And we have to because, you know, these breakout pitchers are just having huge performances day in and day out, right? Lodolo yesterday, Jack Flaherty today. So it might seem like we're overreacting, but I think that's what we have to do when we're pushing these guys up the rankings. So I agree. I really like those guys. The Red Sox pitchers who we've talked a lot about. I know
Ranger Suarez
has moved up. Kikuchi, we've talked a lot
Jesus
about.
Jesus Luzardo looks like he might be back in like 2 weeks at this pace. Like we freaked out about that, but yeah, Eric Fetty, I think, belongs at the low end of that conversation. Nick Pivetta is going to be back next week. You like
know, ranking pitchers this year.
Interesting time for pitchers.
Ranking pitchers this year is weird because there's a clear void at the top. We lost Strider. Mm-hmm. We lost Garrett Cole. We still have really talented pitchers there. We have Corbin Burns, Zach Wheeler, Luis Castillo, so on.
Yeah.
But once you get outside of the top 15, 20, there's kind of some indecision and there's injured pitchers and I don't know. The 20 to 30 range is weird. Mm-hmm. And then 30 to 60, I really like. So
Joe Musgrove, where does he rank relative to all those guys? I have no idea.
I'll let you know tomorrow.
that's the same.
Yeah. So we'll work on that. Oh my goodness gracious player for me. I'm going to cheat a little bit. I don't know that we've ever put a minor league performance in this segment,
but we got to talk about Alek Manoah.
Alek Manoah is coming a little bit later on. We've got to talk about Paul Skeens, who had his longest start of the season at AAA. He threw 6 shutout innings, 4 hits, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts, 75 pitches. It was his first start even completing 5 innings, let alone he went 6 innings in this start. Now at 6 starts at AAA, he has a .39 ERA, a .87 whip, 41 strikeouts over 23 innings. Let me make this incredibly clear. I don't have any information, but I was waiting for a start exactly like this. I think Paul Skeens' next start will be in the majors. I think it will be with the Pirates. Again, I don't have any information. This is just me speculating. I was waiting for a start like this where, whether it's due to him just being really efficient, whatever it might be, him going like 6 innings, and I think they wanted to see him do that, and I think his next start is going to be in the majors. That's just a prediction, a bold prediction.
The thing I still struggle with is, one, it was only 75 starts, despite the fact that he was so much more efficient. 75 pitches, excuse me. He threw 71 in his previous start and only got through 4 1/3. The other thing I keep coming back to is Skeens has yet to make a start on 4 days rest. like, as far as I know, ever. Maybe he did it once in college in a tournament or something, but starting pitchers pitch once a week in college, and the Pirates have had him pitch once a week this season. His last start was a week ago. And so that's the thing that I'm struggling with is, are they really going to ask this guy to come up to the majors and pitch in a five-man rotation for the first time in his life at the major league level, given how gingerly they've treated him so far? I have a tough time seeing that, but it's possible that they just, we've already seen them have to pull Jared Jones from a, what, no hitter, one hitter?
I think it was
at the time he was dominating, but they just said he was only going to throw five innings. It could just be, we're going to go with a six-man rotation moving forward, and that could be the answer. I don't know. I have a hard time seeing them calling him up when he's never thrown on in a five-man rotation, but maybe that just doesn't matter and they're only due a five-man or a six-man rotation.
Yeah, I totally get why you have that concern, but they're going to call him up at some point, right?
Yeah.
And like, unless they drastically change their plans or whatever they're doing in the minors, right? Like, that's probably not going to change anytime soon. Mm-hmm. So they could just go with a six man. They have Quinn Priester in the rotation right now too. I think they could do some of that kind of.
They've got like four guys they could get. Well, three guys they could just get out of the rotation pretty easily.
Yeah. So again, I don't have any information, but that's my guess. I think we're going to see Paul Skeens. His next start will be in the with the Pirates rotation. I don't know that, but it's just a prediction on my part. Let's quickly promote a few things. Reminder to sign up for the FBT newsletter if you haven't already. If you're watching us on YouTube, you can scan the QR code that will take you right to the website where you click on the FBT logo, you punch in your email address, and it's easy as that. Also, if you enjoy the pod, you can leave a 5-star rating on both Apple and Spotify. We really do appreciate it. Let's get into the news and notes. Another day, another prospect promotion. This time, the Brewers promoted Tyler Black, who was Scott's number 42 prospect in his top 100 heading into the season. Tyler Black is 23 years old, the 33rd overall pick back in 2021. And this season at AAA, in 25 games, he was batting .303 with 5 homers, 3 steals, a .918 OPS, really good plate discipline. He gets on base. He does not strike out. He also does not hit the ball hard, but he finds a way to make the most out of his fly balls. I don't think he's going to be a power hitter by any means, but it's an interesting profile. It reminds me of, what did we say in the preseason? I think it was like Alex Bregman with less power and speed, or like Whit Merrifield, who gets on base, something like that. So
yeah,
it's a pretty interesting profile. Tyler Black is 19% rostered, third base eligible on CBS. Chris, what is your interest level in Tyler Black?
I want to be more interested in Tyler Black than I am. The thing that I keep coming back to is, one, like you mentioned, the quality of contact is just really bad. He's played 64 games at AAA, and we have StatCast data for all the games at AAA. Average exit velocity, 85.7 miles per hour dating back to last season. His 95th percentile exit velocity, 104.5 miles per hour, which would have ranked 331st out of 609 players with at least 50 batted balls. So I think it's at best below average raw power and might be even less than that in games. I know he's hit for decent power at AA and AAA, but so did Ester Ruiz, you know, so I have trouble buying into that given the really bad quality of contact. And then the other thing that would be easy enough to overlook that, but he had 47 steals in 84 games at AA last season. He has 11 in 64 games since getting called up to AAA. That's both this season and last. That's about a 25-26 steal pace. And that puts a lot more pressure on the bat to play up if he's a 20 to 25 steal guy rather than a 40 plus steal guy. And I don't know how excited I can get about him. And I kind of wish Scott was on, because I know Scott really likes him and could make a more optimistic case for him. But look, I'll say this. If you play in any roto league, you probably need to add Tyler Black either way, just in case.
How would you rank the recent prospect promotions? Loper Fido, Beck, and Tyler Black?
That's the order for me.
All right. We'll see where he plays too, because he can play all over the diamond. In the minors, he's played first, second, third base, and center field. So he does offer the Brewers some versatility. They have lots of that on their team already, but they called him up for a reason. He was hitting the ball well in the minors. Again, that is Tyler Black. The rest of the news and notes, Luis Robert has been taking batting practice and running at 80%. The White Sox previously said Robert could be ready to return in mid-May. Jesus Luzardo extended playing catch out to 90 feet on Tuesday, his second time playing catch in as many days. Blake Snell is scheduled to throw a bullpen on Wednesday. He went on the IL last week with a grade 2 adductor strain. Nolan Jones was officially placed on the IL with a lower back strain, retroactive to April 29th. Jordan Beck was promoted, as we mentioned. Chris, in leagues with no IL spots, do you have to hold on to Nolan Jones?
Maybe not in a three outfielder league, but I'd try really, really hard to hang on to him, just because, well, it was only 4 months. They were four really, really good months last season. I don't want to give up on him based on 26 games.
Max Scherzer's scheduled rehab start on Tuesday was pushed back due to thumb soreness. Jordan Montgomery was scratched from his start Tuesday due to the game being delayed 2 hours because of a bee colony which formed right behind home plate.
Did you see the...
What?
The beekeeper throughout the first pitch after clearing the bees out? Got a standing ovation. It was electric,
that's
frankly.
Pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
It's weird because, like,
imagine being at that game and you have to wait 2 hours because of bees.
Is the concern that, like, the bees are gonna leave the hive and start attacking people? Is the concern that, like, a foul ball might spook them and cause, like, I'm very curious as to what the delay, like a 2 hour delay, like, we're recording this at 1:15 on Wednesday morning. This game's in the sixth inning.
I don't mind having one game on late at night, though.
Because we have
baseball on while we're recording.
I've been watching baseball for like 12 straight hours now. This is great.
There you go. Craig Kimbrel received treatment for his back and was unavailable again on Tuesday. Jake Berger will begin a rehab assignment at AAA on Wednesday. Braxton Garrett will make a rehab start at AAA Wednesday before potentially returning from the IL. Nick Pivetta is scheduled to make a minor league rehab start on Thursday. Masataka Yoshida will undergo an MRI on his left hand on Wednesday. Yariel Rodriguez was placed on the IL with thoracic spine inflammation, which comes at a very interesting time because Alek Manoah struck out 12 at AAA on Tuesday. He had 19 swinging strikes on 92 pitches, velocity was up across the board. Each of his fastball and sinker averaged 94.2 miles per hour. Overall, it has still been a disaster outside of this start. But it is a really positive start. He's 24% rostered. Chris, any interest in Alek Manoah?
Yes, absolutely. This was a guy who finished top three in AL Cy Young voting in 2022. Like, not that long ago. I know it feels like a long time ago. And there were reasons to think that he wasn't actually as good as his results that year. But, like, Alek Manoah was great in 2022, and he was really good in 2021, too. So, if you've got someone like Hunter Brown and Dane Dunning are both 60% rostered right now. I've seen enough from those guys this season / throughout their careers in Dunning's case. I'd drop them for Alek Manoah just in case, right? Like, just in case he rediscovers 2022. I agree. I'm not even looking at the comments, but I guarantee there's like six people that are saying there's no way Alek Manoah is going to be good. And, like, yeah, I agree. It's unlikely. But this is a player that we've seen pitch like an ace before for a whole season. I will take a flyer on that over guys that I know aren't going to reach that level.
I will add one more name to the drops list there. James Paxton. I would drop James Paxton.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Vaughn Grissom was not activated from the IL because of an illness. We had a pretty wild brawl in the Brewers-Rays game. Jose Siri hit a home run, and then Freddy Peralta hit him with a pitch later in the game. Both Peralta and manager Pat Murphy were ejected from the game. And then later on, there was a play with Abner Uribe covering first base. Him and Siri had some words, and then out of nowhere, these guys are throwing haymakers at each other. It was wild stuff. Wanted to mention with Joey Loperfido promoted by the Astros, Jose Abreu will be optioned to the Florida Complex League on Wednesday. It's been a rough go, and this sucks especially for me. I've always been a huge Jose Abreu fan, so look, Father Time catches up to everybody, and it might just be that time for Jose Abreu, unfortunately. Did want to mention John Singleton in deeper leagues could have some value.
What year is it?
On Tuesday, Loperfido started in left field. Singleton started at first, and Singleton hit his first home run of the season. He added three RBIs. So it most likely will not work out, but in those 15-team roto leagues, cheap exposure to the Astros lineup, just keep an eye on it. John Singleton.
He signed that record pre-arbitration contract a decade ago.
Oof. Wow.
That's wild.
Well, now it's happening. Hopefully. We'll see. Let's take our final break. When we return, we'll get into the rest of Tuesday's action. We'll do that right after this.
What if I told you imaginary friends are real?
This is just so exciting.
Now, get ready for the movie event with the greatest cast you've ever imagined.
Showtime.
Ryan Reynolds, John Krasinski, Kaylee Fleming, Fiona Shaw, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Louis Gossett Jr., Matt Damon, Emily Blunt, George Clooney, Maya Rudolph, Bradley Cooper, Sebastian Maniscalco, John Stewart, Sam Rockwell, Awkwafina, Keegan-Michael Key, and Steve Carell.
I need to throw up or I need a snack. It's one of the two.
Gross.
If. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. Written and directed by John Krasinski.
Exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Yo, what's up, Lollapalooza?
It was meant to be a farewell concert, but it changed the music industry forever.
We gotta do it again.
And launched the careers of countless artists.
We had all been underground bands, but that was changing.
All while giving the mainstream the middle finger.
That's entertainment.
Don't miss this three-part docuseries that was 30 years in the making. Lala, the story of Lollapalooza. New docuseries now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
Welcome back in. Let's talk waiver wire pitchers. Two names in shallower leagues. They are between 70 and 80% rostered. John Gray has allowed one earned run or fewer in each of his last five starts. He was up against the Nationals, where he threw eight innings, one run, three strikeouts to zero walks. And so far this season, he has just leaned all the way into that slider. It is his most used pitch at 47% usage. The problem is that John Gray does not really have anything else working for him. It's just that slider. 78% rostered next week at Coors Field. It's a revenge game, but it's at Coors Field. Spencer Turnbull pitched well again. He was at the Angels, 5 1/3, four runs allowed, four hits allowed, two runs, one earned, six strikeouts with 15 swinging strikes. Just continues to mix in these different breaking balls. He's got a sweeper, he's got a curve, he's got a traditional slider, and they've all been really good for Spencer Turnbull this year. I don't know if they're just going to go with a six-man rotation or
give
Taijuan Walker the boot. But
that's like unfortunately
Turnbull, he's pitched too well. How can they take Turnbull out?
So unfortunately, Rob Thompson was asked about this on Tuesday or Wednesday. Or it wouldn't be Wednesday. That's in the future. it was over the weekend. Sorry. He was asked about utilizing a six-man rotation. I'm reading a story from NBC Sports Philadelphia.com. And the reason he said he doesn't want to use a six-man rotation is because the Phillies have off days on each of the two upcoming Thursdays. And so that would mean that they're either skipping guys in the rotation or starting them on 6 days rest. And they don't want to get everyone off their schedules that much. So at least for the next two turns in the rotation, it sounds like the Phillies are not going to go with a six-man rotation, and Turnbull is likely to go back to the bullpen. That being said,
that stinks.
Two turns through the rotation is two opportunities for someone to get hurt. Pitchers tend to get hurt. Life tends to find a way. And I've been very impressed by Spencer Turnbull. That sweeper seems to have taken him to another level. I'm not ready to just drop him right now, especially in roto leagues, which are deeper, replacement levels lower. And you know who's been pretty useful in roto leagues the last couple of seasons is Matt Strom. Another guy who, former starter, has been really, really effective out of the bullpen for the Phillies. There have been times when I've used Matt Strom in several roto leagues over the past couple of years. I could see Spencer Turnbull still throwing four or five innings a week and at least being useful enough to justify not dropping while you wait to see if he gets in the rotation again. So at least in roto leagues, I'm hanging on to Spencer Turnbull.
All right, so you're not dropping, but you're also not adding, right?
Yeah, that's the problem.
Okay, any interest in John Gray?
No, honestly, no. I think 78% rostered heading into a start at Colorado is probably too much.
Three pitchers between 30 and 60% roster. Tyler Anderson turned in another quality start up against the Phillies. Six innings, three runs, six strikeouts with 15 swinging strikes. That changeup continues to dominate for Tyler Anderson. Looks like he's in line for two starts next week against the Royals and at the Pirates. That's not terrible. And Kyle Gibson has turned in three straight quality starts. He was at the Tigers, where he allowed one run over seven innings with nine strikeouts and 15 swinging strikes. The other name on this list is Dean Kramer, who turned in a quality start against the Yankees. Seven innings, two runs, four strikeouts for him. It looks like he is in line to face the D-backs next week. Kyle Gibson is at the Brewers. Any interest in these names, Chris? Anderson, Gibson, and Dean Kramer?
No, not really. Anderson is probably the most interesting, but I don't see much of anything with Gibson or Kramer. Like, Kramer, at least he's got that good home park and great lineup. So as a streamer, you've got a decent chance for a win in any given week, including today. But in a vacuum, I'm not particularly interested in either of these guys.
Tyler Anderson has a 2.23 ERA that comes with a 4.78 FIP and a 4.81 XFIP. It kind of feels like the Bailey Falter situation, where he's pitching over his head and he's in line for two starts next week. The matchups are okay, but yeah, maybe we should learn our lesson.
In his case, he's just, when he's going well, he is very good at limiting hard contact in a way that could continue to allow him to outrun his peripherals. But even that is, I think you got to have a really short leash with him.
One name in deeper leagues, Ryan Feltner, took a shutout into the ninth inning, and then things went sideways. He was at the Marlins. He still pitched really well. It was eight innings, three runs, three strikeouts, to zero walks, only six swinging strikes. He's throwing his slider more this year. It's a 5.13 ERA. The underlying numbers look pretty good, but the fact that he pitches in Coors Field for half of his starts, he's probably not going to get to those underlying numbers.
Yeah, and I would imagine that 110 strikeout game is probably carrying a lot of weight in his overall strikeout numbers. He's only had one other start with even four or five strikeouts, I guess. He's had three with four. So I didn't hate him as a streamer here because the Marlins are putrid, but it's got to be that specific confluence of events where he's going against a really bad team away from Coors Field to use him.
Let's fire up the worryometer. One, we're not worried about this player at all. 10, we are extremely worried about said player. And I got four hitters on the list here, Chris. Bo Bichette, who is batting .213 with one homer, three steals, and a .577 OPS. His average exit velocity and barrel rate are both a career low to this point in the season. The expected numbers look really bad. Worryometer, Bo Bichette.
I'm going to say 2. I know that's not what people want to hear because I feel like there's been a lot of faith lost in Bo Bichette over the past couple of seasons, but this is so out of whack with where he typically is in terms of not just the results, but the underlying quality of contact metrics. His barrel rate is 2.3%. It was above 9% each of the previous four seasons. So I think he's just cold and we'll figure it out. I have not actively moved Bo Bichette down.
Alex Bregman actually hit his first home run of the season on Tuesday, and so far he's batting .216 with a .577 OPS. Last March/April combined, it was a .219 batting average with a .697 OPS. So I think this is within the range of outcomes for Bregman. He gets off to a slow start. He's in a contract year. Maybe there's some added pressure here, but where is Bregman on the worryometer?
It's the same. It's a 2. He is at least old enough that you could see, okay, maybe Alex Bregman just hit a wall at 30. It sometimes happens, but I'd be very, very surprised if he didn't turn it around.
Corey Seager is batting .236 with two home runs and a .630 OPS. He missed most of the offseason recovering from hernia surgery, which could be the reason for this slow start for him. Where is Corey Seager on the worryometer?
You said it runs 1 to 10?
Yes.
1.
One.
I can't go any lower than 1. So look, his quality of contact metrics aren't quite where they've been specifically last year, but especially, you know, the last four seasons, really. But he still has a 349 expected WOBA. He still has a 382 expected WOBA on contact. 9.8% barrel rate is still very good, even if it's not elite. I have less than no concern about Corey Seager.
All right, let's see if we can get higher than a two.
You're probably not going to.
I don't know.
Maybe. I just looked. I hadn't looked and seen who the next guy was.
O'Neal Cruz is batting 241. He's got three homers, three steals, and a 640 OPS. Mm-hmm. 44 strikeouts are third most in baseball. It's a 37% strikeout rate.
Who has more?
I think Kyle Schwarber has 45.
Okay, yeah, because like, who's played enough to have more strikeouts than O'Neal Cruz?
There are two hitters who are tied for 45. I think Schwarber was one of them.
Okay, entering today, Schwarber and O'Neal Cruz were tied at 44.
Yeah.
Teoscar Hernandez and Joey Gallo and Will Benson were right behind them.
Mm-hmm. O'Neal Cruz still hitting the ball really hard, but lots of ground balls, a 57% mm-hmm. ground ball rate. First question, where is he on the worryometer? Second question, do you plan to lower him in the shortstop rankings? He's kind of a tough one for me because we all really liked him coming into the season, mm-hmm. but he also doesn't have the longest track record. So,
yeah, I mean, the problem is if I was going to lower O'Neal Cruz, it would be behind guys who are also struggling, but who don't have nearly as much upside, like Nico Horner, Dansby Swanson, Ha-Seong Kim. I know Kim and Horner in particular have not been terrible.
Kim's actually been, I saw it today, I think he's averaging 3.1 fantasy points per game. That's really good.
Yeah. Horner is actually hitting the ball really well over the last like 2 weeks since he moved back into the lineup. The leadoff spot, he just has one steal for the season, and the Cubs are not running at all.
Yeah.
So I think I could move O'Neal Cruz down in my overall rankings, but probably not much in my shortstop rankings because I do still have faith that he's going to figure it out. The upside is so high. I suspect he'll run more when he gets hotter and is actually getting on base more, but he's already got three steals. I don't know. It's one of those things where, like, as bad as he's been, it's like still a 2020 pace, and that's probably the floor. So I will say four because striker rate is super high, and the time periods where we were optimistic about O'Neal Cruz cutting his strikeout rate were pretty small, about as big as what we're dealing with right now. So I think you probably project like a 30% strikeout rate moving forward. But I still think he'll be a starting caliber fantasy option moving forward.
O'Neal Cruz is 79% started on CBS. And as of now, looks like there's six games next week, three lefties on the schedule.
And he was out of the lineup against a lefty today, I believe.
Yeah. I think in a head-to-head points league, you're not dropping him. I think you can bench O'Neal Cruz for next week.
Agree
unless he has a big rest of this week. But obviously, we have time to see what happens there. Let's get into some of the leftovers from Tuesday. And we had a pitcher's duel between Cole Reagans and Jose Berríos. Reagans, it was 6 2/3 innings, one run, nine strikeouts with 14 swinging strikes on 105 pitches. The fastball velocity was up to 97.7 miles per hour in this start for Cole Reagans. And he's looked really good. I know the whip is high, but he has a really high BABIP. I think that will drop as the season goes on. He's been everything that you could ask for, I think. And Jose Berríos also has been really good. He was up against the Royals, seven innings, two runs allowed, three strikeouts, only five swinging strikes on 92 pitches. He allowed 12 hard hits in this game, 94 mile per hour average exit velocity. He's got a 144 ERA and a 101 whip. That comes with a 403 FIP, a 419 xFIP, and he had a 443 expected ERA entering the start. If you want to sell high on Jose Berríos, now is probably the time to do so.
Yeah, I was going to say, go call the person who has, gosh, which of the top 30 starting pitchers aren't really pitching well right now. Go call the guy who has Tanner Bibee. Go call the person who has,
I keep coming back to Musgrove, but like Scott said yesterday, you probably want to buy lower.
I felt more confident in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would trade him for Blake Snell, hoping that he comes back relatively quickly. He's going to throw off a bullpen. He's going to throw a bullpen session.
There's not really many clear.
There's not a great option is the problem.
There aren't clear buy low pitchers in the top
Justin
30.
Justin Steele.
Steele's a good one. I mean, Kevin Gausman is obvious, but I don't think you could pull that off.
Yeah, like.
It probably has to be Berríos and another player for Gausman.
Yeah, like Chris Bassitt is kind of the same thing as Jose Berríos. He's just not getting good results right now, so I wouldn't make that trade.
Right.
Maybe Framber Valdez.
That's not bad.
If you could do it. Like, I would definitely do that if you could. I'm wondering if you could.
What about Grayson Rodriguez? Would you do that?
I'm really struggling with Grayson Rodriguez right now because, like, he is, like, the poster boy of this guy should be better. And I can't quite figure out what it is that's just a little bit off with him. Like, his command isn't quite where it should be. And the stuff is all, like, it's all, like, 30% whiff rates on all of his pitches. But the strikeout rate is still a little disappointing. So I would do that. I do worry that Grayson Rodriguez might just be Jose Berríos right now with a little more strikeout upside. But I would do that. Yes,
I would do that as well. I also think to throw some hitters out there, if you could turn Berríos into Randy Arozarena.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yes, I would do that. How about any of the hitters we mentioned earlier? Castellanos, Carter, Langford, or would you try and aim higher?
I think aiming higher is what you should start with, but I think I would do any of those guys, Langford, Carter, or Castellanos. I'd also consider, and this one might be a little more controversial, but four injured outfielders that I would trade Jose Berríos for, Christian Yelich, Nolan Jones, Cody Bellinger, and Joshua Lowe. I would try to move him for any of those guys. I just think the upside is so much higher.
What about Luis Robert?
Sure. Yeah. With him coming back in mid-May, if he stays healthy or gets back to 100% health. Yeah, I would do that. Yeah. Which all of this is to say that we know what Jose Berríos is. And when things are going really well, when things are going really poorly, he's never really a different guy. And so I think he's executing at a really high level right now. Like we talked about with Ranger Suarez yesterday, where I don't know if anything's changed except that he's just pitching really well right now. And sometimes guys pitch really well for whole seasons.
Yeah.
But I tend to think Jose Berríos will probably be closer to a 3.8 to 4 ERA guy moving forward.
I agree. And again, this is just a reminder that you don't have to trade Jose Berríos.
Yeah, no, he's totally a top 40 starting pitcher. He's a totally fine guy to have on your team. It's just there's limited upside. He's a stabilizer, not a difference maker.
Some other pitching leftovers. Luis Castillo looked awesome against the Braves. 7 shutout innings with 7 strikeouts and 20 swinging strikes. Yu Darvish was solid in his return against the Reds. He threw 5 shutout with 3 strikeouts in that one. Freddy Peralta was solid before he was ejected. 5 1/3, 2 runs allowed, 7 strikeouts. And Mackenzie Gore, also solid. Tough matchup at the Texas Rangers. 5 innings, 2 runs, 7 strikeouts with 18 swinging strikes for Mackenzie Gore. The only thing I wanted to point out, and I think this will be a consistent problem for him, he has allowed 3 earned runs or fewer in all 6 of his starts. Mm-hmm. He has completed 6 innings just once this season. So loses value in a points league, loses value in leagues where quality starts are a category, but so far the ratios and strikeouts look pretty damn good for Mackenzie Gore.
Yeah, I remain extremely optimistic about Mackenzie Gore moving forward, and it's been like the start against the Dodgers wasn't great, but it was really good. And it was against the Dodgers. And then today it's like he wasn't great, but he was really good. It's against the Rangers in Texas. So I tend to remain very optimistic about him. I will also grant that like everything Reynaldo Lopez is doing looks very similar, if not better than Mackenzie Gore. And yet when Reynaldo Lopez has 3 earned runs in 5 innings, I'm like, aha, finally, the worm is turning. And then Mackenzie Gore gives up 2 earned runs in 5 innings. I'm like, yes, an ace in the making. So I will grant that I am being intellectually inconsistent there because I like Mackenzie Gore more than Reynaldo Lopez and I believe in him more. The other one, I don't ever want to hear any complaints about Luis Castillo again. I don't care if he comes out next April and has a 12 ERA. Luis Castillo is going to be fine. As long as he is healthy and throwing 98 miles per hour and doing all the stuff that he does, I don't want to hear anyone complaining about Luis Castillo ever again. Like, it better be the end of Luis Castillo's career the next time I hear someone complaining, because we've done this way too many times over the last few years where it's like, oh, I'm worried about Luis Castillo, I'm going to sit him, he's not good. And it's like, no, he's awesome.
Yeah.
Stop worrying.
I think two of his last three starts that have been awesome have come against the Braves and in Coors Field. So yeah. he is what he is. He's a top five starting pitcher. He's awesome. He's Luis Castillo. Mm-hmm. Someone who was not awesome on Tuesday was Logan Webb. He ended his streak of 7+ inning quality starts. He was at the Red Sox, where he allowed 9 hits, 4 runs, 3 walks over just 3 2/3 innings, 4 swinging strikes on 91 pitches. He allowed 12 hard hits in this game, 99.5 average exit velocity. That means all of the balls in play against Logan Webb were better than Aaron Judge's exit velocity last season. Just to put that in perspective. And Chris, it's easy to not notice the warts for Logan Webb when he's pitching well, but clearly they are there. He allows lots of hard contact. It was a 4.25 expected ERA entering the start. The strikeouts are not where you want them to be for an ace, 6.4 K per nine and a 7.9% swinging strike rate. Those are actually down considerably from where they were last year. And even with that, the ratios still look good. The underlying numbers are fine. I want more strikeouts. I have Logan Webb on a lot of teams. I think he's going to be fine, but this was just a bad start.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out like what the explanation for why he's not getting any whiffs right now. Like his whiff rate on his changeup is like 15-17%. It was 23% last season. And I'm looking like maybe he's throwing more in the strike zone and that's why he's getting more contact. No, he's actually throwing in the strike zone less than he ever has, down to 44% zone rate. He's getting more chases than ever on those pitches out of the zone, generating more contact on those chases, but that's not a bad thing. On the whole, contact on a pitch out of the strike zone is probably not that much worse, might be even better than a single whiff. So it's frustrating that the strikeouts are lower than they usually are, but I don't really see any reason to be concerned about Logan Webb.
Some hitting leftovers. Jaron Duran had slowed down a bit recently, but he had a nice game here. He went 3-for-4 with a walk and his 9th stolen base. He had 3 batted balls over 107 miles per hour. Paul Goldschmidt showed some signs of life in game 2 of their doubleheader. He went 4-for-5 with a double and a run scored. Riley Green had himself a day, 4-for-9. Woo! 4-for-9 combined across the doubleheader with a double dong. He is now up to a .388 on base percentage, 7 homers, 24 runs scored, and a .912 OPS. He has been great. Willy Adames is quietly off to a very good start. He went 1-for-3 with his 4th home run, added 4 RBI. He is batting .270, 4 homers, 4 steals, and .810 OPS. Bryce Terang continues his great start. He went 2-for-3 with a double, a walk, 3 RBI, and his 14th stolen base. And Trey Turner, also quietly off to a nice start, 2-for-5 with 2 steals. He is batting .346 with 2 home runs, 10 steals, and an .866 OPS. Any standouts, anything that catches your attention here, Chris? Turner, Terang, Adames, Riley Green, Goldschmidt, and Duran.
You know Riley Green catches me. He was my player I love, right?
Yep.
Yeah, he's always going to catch my attention. I thought it was interesting that he batted cleanup in the second game of the doubleheader, the first time he hasn't batted leadoff in like almost a month. Don't know if there was anything to that, just that was something I noticed. But yeah, he's awesome. I did write about Paul Goldschmidt. It'll be up on the site on Wednesday on CBSSports.com. Writing about rankings fallers. I wrote about rankings risers for the month of April yesterday. I wrote about fallers today. And he was my biggest faller at the first base position. It was only from like 7 to 10 at first base, but that's like a 4-round drop in the overall rankings for me. And what I said was, if Paul Goldschmidt was finished, this is what it would look like. The strikeout rate's way high, quality of contact metrics all way down. So it was good to see him have a good game. He's going to have to do a lot more than that. But the thing that remains tough about writing Paul Goldschmidt off is, I think it was 2019. I think the year he turned 30, he had his worst season ever. And we were like, well, this is it. Paul Goldschmidt's on the decline phase. And he turned it around and ended up winning an MVP, what, 3 years later? So it's really hard to write him off despite a lot of reasons to do so.
Some bullpen updates for the Tigers in game one of that doubleheader. Jason Foley entered in the eighth inning with one out, a runner on first, and a one-run lead. He was facing 9-1-2 in the Cardinals lineup. He gave up a hit, but then got the next two outs. It was Shelby Miller who got the ninth with a one-run lead. He gave up two runs on three hits. He took his second blown save and third loss. Any concern here with Foley's usage, Chris, or do you think that was just the spot they needed him to pitch in a one-run game?
I mean, you would hope that they could trust him for a multi-inning save. I don't know if that's something he's really done very much of. Doesn't look like it as a reliever in the majors. So it might just be a situation where they thought the highest leverage was facing that 9-1-2. It's a little weird, but there hadn't been any situations like this in a long time, really, in like more than two weeks now. So I have no concerns there. Jason Foley's the guy.
On the other side for the Cardinals, Ryan Helsley struck out two for his league-leading 10th save. For the Orioles, Craig Kimbrell was unavailable. Jacob Webb got the final four outs for his first save. For the Rockies, Justin Lawrence entered in the ninth with a three-run lead. Runners on second and third, he gave up three runs on two hits, a walk, and a hit by pitch. He took his first blown save.
I mean, that game was bonkers.
Yeah.
The Rockies went up 5-0 in the first inning. The Marlins scored five runs in the bottom of the ninth and then went on to win in extras after Tanner Scott gave up a run in the 10th, although I think it was the inherited where the ghost runner, placed runner.
Mm-hmm. While we're talking about crazy games, I meant to discuss this earlier, but the Guardians and Astros was also pretty crazy. The Guardians went up 3-0. The Astros answer back. They go up 8-3. The Guardians then tied it at 8. They took a one-run lead in the 10th. The Astros then walked it off with a Victor Caratini home run in the bottom of the 10th.
Yeah, they should have left Emmanuel Class A in for the 10th. I don't know what they were thinking there.
Mm-hmm. For the Royals, James MacArthur struck out one for his 7th save. For the Mets, Edwin Diaz was unavailable. Reed Garrett worked the 7th, Adam Ottavino in the 8th, and then Jorge Lopez in the 9th with a 3-run lead. He gave up one run but picked up his 2nd save. For the White Sox, Michael Kopech got the 9th with the game tied. He gave up a run on a hit and a walk. He took his 3rd loss of the season. Kopech is now up to a 4.41 ERA and a 1.29 whip. Chris, do you think the White Sox might start to consider other names here? Jordan Leisure, they also just promoted Prelander Baroa.
I believe Leisure also gave up two runs today. He's been good overall, but not great timing for that. And his strikeout rate's only 15%. It's possible that they go with someone else instead of Kopech. His usage has been a little weird where they've gone multi-innings multiple times. I still have a lot of faith in Michael Kopech being a good pitcher, but maybe not a great fantasy closer, I guess.
For the Twins on the other side, welcome back to Yoan Duran, who got the 9th with a one-run lead. He gave up a hit, but struck out one for his first save. For the Oakland A's, Mason Miller got the 9th with a 3-run lead. Can you guess what he did?
Struck out the side and made everybody look really dumb.
That's exactly what he did. And he picked up his 8th save in the process.
His strikeout rate's got to be up to like almost 60% now. It's must-see TV.
I know people are not going to want to hear this, but something I thought about was Mason Miller is a sell high right now.
Only because of injury risk.
Yeah. It's not because the Oakland A's are bad. It is solely because of injury risk.
Yeah. Like his strikeout rate is 55% right now. And when you watch him, it's honestly shocking it's not higher.
I mean, through the first month of the season,
he's the best pitcher in baseball right now. He's been the best
reliever. I was going to say reliever, but you're right.
I believe he has a negative FIP right now, which is always fun when that happens.
So again, it's
no, you
don't have to trade Mason Miller, but man, if you can get the world for him right now, it doesn't hurt to try.
Look, everything we said about Mike Trout, every time we talked about him so far this season was as long as he stays healthy. And the thing about these players who have injury risk, and I acknowledge Mason Miller had a UCL sprain last year. He has heightened injury risk. Just because they're healthy right now, it says nothing about their ability to remain healthy. And so while all pitchers have risk, not all of them throw 101 miles per hour, average 101 miles per hour with their fastball. So yeah, he could stay healthy the rest of the way and be the number one closer in fantasy, even if he only gets 30 saves. I think the upside is that high. But yeah, it's absolutely possible that this falls apart fairly quickly for reasons outside of his control.
For the Padres, Robert Suarez struck out one for his 10th save. He is tied with Ryan Helsley for the league lead. For the Mariners, Andrés Muñoz got the final five outs, striking out three for his fifth save. For the Angels, Carlos Estevez entered with two outs in the eighth, a runner on first with a one-run lead. He struck out JT Realmuto. And then Estevez started the ninth. He gave up a game-tying home run to Nick Castellanos. And then two batters later, he gave up a two-run homer to Johan Rojas. Estevez took his second blown save and first loss. He's now up to a 6.23 ERA. I don't even know where they would go. I guess Matt Moore is a name that could be on your radar, but they seem to trust Estevez. So,
yeah, I would. I'd be surprised if they had that short of a leash with Estevez, given the dearth of other options. So I wouldn't be too worried about it right now.
All right. And then on the other side for the Phillies, Jose Alvarado entered in the eighth with the Phillies down one run. He gave up a hit, but pitched a clean inning. It was Jeff Hoffman who got the ninth with a two-run lead and converted his second save of the season. To stream or not to stream on Wednesday, and as we mentioned yesterday, it's pretty rough. Pretty rough on Wednesday here.
Yeah,
You should not stream.
Like, I could see Luis Gil having a great start. I could also see him lasting three innings and walking five.
I wrote at Milwaukee, but he's at Baltimore, actually.
Yeah. So okay. Scary. That's tougher than. I would prefer not to start any of these fellas.
If I had to just give out names, I would say Ashcraft at the Padres.
Maeda against the Cardinals.
And Quinn Priester at the A's, I guess. Don't start any of those players.
There is definitely one pitcher on Thursday who I like a lot more than anybody on Wednesday.
All right, Chris, who is he?
Edward Cabrera against the Rockies, obviously.
Let's go.
Walk rate through his first three starts is only 9%. That's a little higher than average, but way lower than his career average. Strikeout rate's like 30%, getting a lot of weak contact. I wrote about Edward Cabrera as a rankings riser for me on Monday and or Tuesday, I guess, is when that came out. And even though the results haven't been great, I feel pretty optimistic about him moving forward.
I have two very important updates from the D-backs and Dodgers game. First, on their video screen, they had an animation of a bee and it said beat LA. Awesome work. Love it. Corbin Carroll just narrowly missed his second home run.
Just missed it.
Yeah. So I really thought he got it though, man. Wow. I'm surprised that didn't go out, but hopefully some good signs coming for Corbin Carroll. I know we could use some more power there. We're going to wrap there for Chris. I am Frank. Thanks as always for tuning into Fantasy Baseball Today. Please make sure to follow and leave a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify. And we will be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV, the CBS Sports app, and streaming on Paramount+.